The number of deaths relating to the coronavirus has reached 2,715. Italy has become Europe's worst affected country. They've over 300 cases confirmed and 11 deaths as a result of COVID-19. Here, the National Public Health Emergency Team met yesterday and agreed, among other things, that the Ireland-Italy Six Nation rugby match on the 7th of March should not go ahead. The IRFU is meeting with the Minister, Simon Harris, to discuss this cancellation. On the line now, Dr. Gabriel Scally, Professor of Public Health at the University of Bristol, former Director of Public Health on the Eastern Board in Northern Ireland, well known, of course, in this jurisdiction for his work on the cervical check scandal. Also, I'll be talking to Independent Dublin City Councillor Manix Flynn about the St. Patrick's Day festivities and the incoming President of the Irish Road Haulage Association, Eugene Drennan, will talk to us about the difficulties there, and we'll speak as well to the travel industry and to Fianna Fáil's education spokesperson. Lots to get through then. First of all, Gabriel Scally, thank you indeed for joining us. What are your own thoughts and what have you made so far of how this virus has been managed internationally?
I think it's been quite impressive, actually. This is the first time in my experience that we've seen such a coordinated international effort to stop a virus of this nature spreading across the world and causing a huge number of cases and quite significant number of deaths. So I think it's quite an impressive international effort, which seems to be working in terms of controlling the spread of this virus. Of course, there are longer term questions about how we stop these new viruses occurring, and that's a matter for international cooperation and a look at health regulations right across the world.
I'm looking at a headline in the Daily Telegraph, which says today that thousands of Britons will be tested for coronavirus by GPs amid fears that the explosion of cases in Europe means there could already be far more cases in Britain than have already been identified. Is that something you would support?
Well, certainly people who have travelled to areas affected, particularly countries have divided into Category 1 and Category 2 countries, and the most important countries, there are only four named in the UK, which is parts of China, Iran as a whole, parts of Korea, and some of the northern Italian towns that are under special measures. So travellers from there should, if they've got any symptoms at all, should self-isolate and should seek help from their GP. But I don't think people should panic unnecessarily about this. The symptoms are like a bad cold or a bad flu, and we're quite lucky that the flu is at very, very low levels now, the traditional seasonal flu. But a lot of the measures that people would take with flu are important ones to take in terms of how to treat themselves. But here, slightly different, we're trying to stop the spread of the virus, and that means self-isolation, people staying at home if they think they might have been in contact with people with the virus and are developing symptoms. And that use of self-isolation is a really new thing in my experience, long experience of public health in this country.
And just on the question of testing, Dr. Scally, is it possible to test people before they show symptoms, if they've been in those places? I mean, as opposed to just going through the whole business of self-isolation for a fortnight?
I'm not sure that it is. And the way in which people are being tested coming in and out of countries is, of course, they're being tested for their temperature. Their temperature is being taken, and suspicion arises if they've got a high temperature, of course. And I think that's probably the only way it could be done satisfactorily pre any other symptoms arising.
Yeah, and what do you make of the strong advice now being given to the IRFU to call off the rugby match against Italy?
Well, you know, as a regular attender at rugby matches, you are in very close proximity with a lot of people over a fair period of time, an hour or two, and got to understand about rugby in Italy. Rugby in Italy is geographically distributed, and it's most of the rugby support and rugby teams are in the north of Italy, which is where some of these cities are, where they've had quite 300 cases now. And I think the advice is probably wise if it wouldn't be a terrible thing if this virus was to be brought entirely innocently by someone travelling from the north of Italy, from one of these towns or cities, into Lansdowne Road and spread across the country.
I suppose we've got flights arriving daily from places like Milan and Bologna and other places in northern Italy. And the question arises, like, you know, cumulatively, there will probably be as many people coming from the north of Italy to Dublin on those flights ahead of the international. Now, logic would suggest surely that we shouldn't be having flights coming in from those places.
Well, I don't think that. I think I'll be going too far, but it is the occurrence of the rugby match is the important thing, and having all that very large number of people congregating together in close proximity, and that's, I think, what creates the unique situation.
Yes, stay with us if you can, Dr. Scally. I want to go to somebody else who's as pressed for time as perhaps you are yourself. Thomas Byrne, Fianna Fáil education spokesperson. You're calling on the Department of Health to urgently engage with schools who've had contact with the relevant regions of Italy and anywhere else affected. What is your thinking behind this, Thomas Byrne?
I would have to say that my assumption would be that that should be already happening, but it doesn't appear to be because there's different advice there. Now, I certainly don't want to be in the realm of panic, and I'm listening to the experts as much as everybody else. But I think the problem in particular with schools is that there's no central decision-making process. Traditionally, schools are left to make decisions for themselves. And I think what needs to happen here is that the Department of Health, Department of Education need to engage with the relevant management bodies. There's not that many of them who can then give the advice to schools and give direction on it. That just doesn't appear to be happening at the minute, and is causing then concern, which is not what you want in this. You want rational decision-making based on the advice of experts. And I'm sure that's what schools want as well.
And presumably this is based on the fact that we had the midterm break last week. Students from some schools were on skiing and other kinds of trips in areas which have now been affected by coronavirus. And as you say, there's a big variety in the kind of advice that the parents and the students are getting depending on what school they've been to.
That's what concerns me. And what concerns me as well is that sometimes with schools, when you have a big community there, and parents, teachers, management bodies, all sorts of organisations, different views can take hold, and sometimes the advice isn't as precise as it can be. Now, I can't comment on the individual schools, but except to say that they appear to be taking different approaches. So I think it's best if a common approach is taken in consultation, not announced perhaps over the airways, but in consultation with the management bodies, who can then give the exact advice that schools then would be only too grateful to accept.
Yeah,
and to act on.
I think there was an effort in the southeastern part of the country to have some sort of a news blackout on whatever precautions were being advised. I mean, that seemed bizarre.
I don't understand that at all. I think we need as much proper information as possible, and that can only come from the Department of Health, the HSE, and those experts, and they filter it through the various bodies. I think that's really, really important. Because otherwise, then, if you have a news blackout, then rumours start, misinformation starts. We need the exact information from the Department of Health. And it has to be said, in the last few hours, since yesterday evening, I think, look, they've been upfront, they've been out there, and we need to listen to them. And Dr. Scally as well, I think, very important advice for us who are non-medics and non-experts in this public health field.
Yeah, just one other question on an unrelated topic, Thomas Byrne, before I let you go. I know you're on the Fianna Fáil negotiating team, which probably means you have to be a bit judicious in what you can say, but when do you think the real talking will start?
But it's really talking about to start right now with the Green Party. So we're just having here literally a cup of tea and, you know, to talking to members. We know some of them personally, but the majority of them we wouldn't know very well. So I think that's really important. And we're going to go through a range of topics, as you health and housing, top of the agenda, but also other topics as well today, like childcare, climate change, of course, Brexit, education, indeed,
yeah. I've heard a suggestion, now it's not confirmed yet, that the Greens are going to hang fairly tough. One of the things they want is to be given control of the Department of Public Expenditure. They want control of the chequebook. How would you feel about that?
Sean, we haven't got into those issues at all, and that hasn't been mentioned. And I think, look, we let these negotiations take their course. I think every party is going to be conscious of the mandate that it got. But not only that, I think every party is going to be conscious of the responsibility that we have to sort out the problems that face the country that were assessed during the election. Housing and health being top of the list, and indeed climate change as well, which really relates to all aspects of government policy.
I'll just say one word of thanks to Thomas Byrne. At least you didn't say you're not going to negotiate on the airwaves. We'll let you back to have your to you with the Greens.
And thank you. I did though either.
No, you didn't. That's true. Yes. Back to you, Dr. Scally. Just on the question of schools, I mean, is it possible to give uniform advice to schools?
Well, I think if there is an issue that arises in terms of people who've been to a particular town or a particular place, for example, in Italy or in China or Korea, then that advice would have to be different compared to a school where some pupils or teachers may have been to Korea as a whole or other bits of Italy or whatever. So I think the HSE, I think their response so far has been very good, and I'm sure they will be preparing guidance for schools and for other. I mean, it's important for workplaces as well. Remembering that the people who are particularly vulnerable are those with pre-existing illnesses, long-term illnesses, you know, like diabetes, or particularly in this case, because pneumonia is a real problem with the coronavirus, it would appear, so people with chest conditions. So I'm sure HSE will put advice in place for schools and for workplaces and so on.
What about airports? Is airport screening effective? I mean, for instance, should everybody coming off a flight from Northern Italy and other affected areas have their temperature checked?
I don't think that's necessary at the moment, but certainly people need to be aware who are travelling. And aeroplanes are a place where you can pick up viruses, but you can pick up the virus from someone if you're in close contact with them. And the advice in terms of stopping it spread are do the normal things, which is wash your hands, keep surfaces clean, and take these normal precautions. And they seem to be working pretty well.
But like, if an area you're familiar with, Northern Ireland, we've heard of three schools in Northern Ireland telling students who returned from trips to Northern Italy to remain at home as a precaution. In Waterford, pupils returning from Italy are told they can continue to attend school as normal because they're showing no symptoms. And then this morning we hear in Donegal, pupils returning from Italy, even though they weren't in a restricted area, they are self-isolating as a precaution and to allay fears. So, I mean, you know, you do have, I suppose, this complete variety of procedures being followed.
And that's a pity. And I think people need to look at the websites and take the advice. If people haven't been to one of the really directly affected areas, or if they've not been in contact with a person who's known to have coronavirus, or have not been to a healthcare facility where patients with coronavirus were treated, they don't need to take any very special measures such as self-isolation. And you only need to be tested for the virus if you've got symptoms or in the last and have been in contact with someone who's had it or one of these areas. So this is what happens with infectious diseases. There's always an element of concern, and of course people want to protect children and elderly people in particular. But it's really important that we behave very responsibly in this and try and reduce the opportunities for spread, but not spreading panic either, because it's entirely the wrong way of dealing with this.
When we hear and read and see like these policies of self-isolation, sealing off villages and towns, people panic buying face masks, stores and chemist shops running out of hand sanitizers. I mean, this is all about ultimately, as you say, it's a flu virus.
The origins of the virus are of course very interesting. The way it's risen out of the food system in China, and there's a big piece of international work to be done to try and stop viruses, human viruses and other organisms affecting humans that have risen out of poor practices, particularly with regards to meat. And that's really, really, really important. But people shouldn't panic. There's no need for people to wear masks to protect themselves from the virus going around their daily activities. There's no evidence that works. People have to wear masks if they're treating someone with the virus or if they've got the virus themselves. And I actually don't like to see people wandering around normally wearing masks. I don't think that's, you know, that's not a, it is of no advantage. And it just looks to me as if we're panicking ever so slightly about this and we shouldn't.
Yeah, and what would you say to somebody, say, who's booked to go on a holiday to the Canaries, Tenerife or elsewhere, say at the weekend?
We have to see what happens in terms of the cases in Tenerife and how well the isolation is working. And I don't see a problem. I'm actually only booked last week to go on a holiday to Tenerife in a few weeks' time. And I'll be watching that very closely myself. And people shouldn't panic. And there will be, I no doubt, good advice to travellers to the Canaries about what they can. And
as of now, do you expect to be going there?
Sorry?
As of now, do you expect to be going to the Canaries to Tenerife?
Well, I hope that the outbreak in Tenerife is isolated just to the hotel and kept under control. And I fully expect to go. I think there will be people who will choose not to go. But we've got to go on living our lives.
And, yeah. But you think it's a good idea, as you explained earlier, that we should call off the rugby match for the reasons you've explained. What about something like the St. Patrick's Day parade, the festivals and all that?
Well, I don't know if the St. Patrick's Day parade really counts in the same way. You know, it'd be different if you were having the potential of large numbers of people from North Italy coming to the St. Patrick's Day parade, or coming from China or affected areas of China or Korea, etc., or Iran. But that's extremely unlikely.
Yeah.
So each of these events needs to have a risk assessment carried out and looked at. And I don't think there's any need for us to do anything more. After all, you know, we did cancel rugby matches because of foot and mouth disease. I remember it well. In order to stop the transmission of foot and mouth disease, and I think it's very wise in this occasion to look long and hard at things like the rugby match. And if the decision is that the rugby match, the advice is that the rugby match should not go ahead, I think that should be followed.
Right. Now, finally, might we see some small villages and towns sealed off here if there is a confirmed case in an area? I mean, would that be a sensible or a realistic public health approach?
It is a realistic public health approach. I'm not sure what the legal situation in terms of providing that sort of isolation to a community are like. And I prefer if we relied upon people themselves to show good sense. And it has been very impressive that people have taken the advice about self-isolating if they've been in contact with cases or in places where there were contact cases. And people have been doing that extremely well. And there are very few examples, it seems to me, of people who haven't abided by that very wise guidance that they've had. And I think we have a strong feeling of community in Ireland, and I think should we ever get cases, I'm sure that feeling of community will come into play, and people will do the wise thing and take the good advice that is available.
So no panic, as you say. Dr. Gabriel Scally, Professor of Public Health at the University of Bristol, thank you so much indeed for joining us. We're staying with this story. Let's talk about the St. Patrick's Weekend Festival. Manix Flynn is an independent Dublin City Councillor. I gather you have reservations about going ahead with this festival, Manix.
Good morning, Sean. Good morning, Elizabeth. I do indeed. I think, you know, panic only spreads, you know, in the absence of, you know, public certainty, you know, and I certainly think that there'll be a lot of people arriving from Italy to the St. Patrick's Festival. It is a week. I mean, tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people hit the streets of Dublin and spend the weekend here. I certainly believe that the city manager and the organisers of the St. Patrick's Festival need to make very clear statements and need to consider it. I mean, remember not too long ago when we had a storm over Galway, they cancelled the European City of Culture event. And I think you have to exercise the same kind of caution here. I mean, this virus is airborne. It's out there, for the want of a better word, you know, and it is, you know, spreading. And it's only a matter of time.
Well, I think it's transmitted person to person. I'm not sure it's carried in the air. No, I'm no medical expert, no more than yourself, Mannix. But look, should we not trust...
Well, it's carried by human beings, you know, one to the next, you know, and as yes. I say, the World Health Organization has made it very, very clear that human beings were not really prepared for this. The statement today that came out from the World Health Organization made that very clear. So what I'm saying is here that we need to be prepared and we need to inform our public. And again, you know, I concur very much with Dr. Gabriel there about the issue of public notices and to avoid public
yeah, but
panic.
Do you believe the parade and surrounding festival events, should they be stood down?
I really think, you know what I mean, that we need to be very cautious about it. And I actually do believe that they need to be stood down. I think you really have to put the public's health and safety and the safety of the country, you know, to the forefront here. I mean, they've just cancelled a match. And I think that's very wise because of the close proximity of the outbreak in Italy. I think they should go this step further and say that all they're doing is postponing the St. Patrick's Festival. They've done it before. And I also think that an event like that then gives the public great awareness. I also think that the Minister for the Environment, the Minister for Health and the Taoiseach should convene a special committee to inform the public around this, because the last thing you want to see on the streets of Dublin is everybody wearing masks and everybody avoiding each other and the kind of...
I tell you, they do well to get their hands in them anyway. Look, Mannix, thank you very much. Because there's been such a run on them. Mannix Flynn, independent Dublin City Councillor, thank you indeed for joining us. We got a text yesterday from a listener saying, Sean, there are lots of truck drivers thundering northwards after delivering all over northern Italy. Is there any advice from them? Asked Christopher. Well, now, who better to talk to about that than Eugene Drennan, incoming president of the Irish Road Haulage Association. Eugene, have you been hearing and from concerned members of your association about coronavirus?
Just now it's starting to get a little bit cautious. It's only since the focus came on Italy that has really become an issue for us. I think the nature of our business would be for picking it up or for transferring the disease would be on the lower side of catchment, because truck drivers by and large are, you know, it's a solitary job. We do reach the destination, perhaps unload and load. But we can take good. We are going to issue some guidelines on taking safety measures at that level, and we do need some help on issues around it. But the chances of us being the mode, or the, or even our people working for us getting the virus, we would hope are by far the lesser of any of them. I would be a little bit. We are a little bit more cautious than. Your doctor there, Dr. Lally, who was very sound advice.
Gabriel Scally, yeah.
Or Scally, I beg your pardon. You know, this is a flu-like symptom, but we didn't see flus attacking healthy people before, or younger people, and the dying. It does attack them, but they don't die. So there's a little bit more...
Yes, but
so
I think by and large, the people who have died are people who have an underlying illness. I think that's been the experience far.
Hopefully.
And it was mentioned as well by Gabriel Scally, the precedent for the foot and of the foot and mouth in 2001, which saw matches called off and so forth. I mean, but at that stage, I suppose a different kind of, you know, mode of transmission. You were having your truck sprayed and that kind of thing, weren't you?
We were, because but it was the mode of transmission. Whereas, as they're saying there, the mode of transmission on this disease is human contact, or by sneezing, or, you know, spraying of. Bodily fluid somewhere or other, and to that we can, you know, we'd be in the lower side of risk, we would hope.
Yes.
But having said that, we do need some help on it, Sean, in that from Europe, whereas they have a coordinated approach to attack it on the health side, we need a coordinated approach as to how they will handle us, you know, that it will be streamlined and straightforward.
Okay, well, look.
For trucks going, we would have a good penetration, a reasonable penetration of trucks going into Lombardy and Veneto, mainly with the meat industry's products every week. And to those, we would need a derogation from Europe on our TACO obligations that we can get in and out.
Okay, well, look.
And we would need clear instruction from the Department of Health and Transport, and perhaps an issue of gloves and sanitizer and masks, because they've gone in scarce supply.
Yeah.
So we need some of that to protect our people.
Right. Eugene Drennan, incoming president of the Irish Road Haulage Association. I think your predecessor is now ensconced in Dáil Éireann, Verona Murphy. Now, for the last word on this, at least for the moment, I'm joined by Pat Dawson, chief executive of the Irish Travel Agents Association. Pat, are you seeing much impact by way of people cancelling flights and holidays as a result of coronavirus?
No, not much impact at the moment, Sean. Certainly people are sort of concerned and worried about it and making contact with our members and, you know, people that are abroad would make contact and we'd make contact with them. So, I mean, people sort of know the status, you know, regarding the travel, and we depend on the Department of Foreign Affairs and how they see it and how they view it. And it's all systems go at the moment, and people are travelling. It's not the greatest thing in the world. I mean, people are definitely concerned, as we're all concerned about in Ireland here in big time, that we certainly don't want it to affect our tourism at home. And of course, from our point of view, it is a concern. And every hour it's a new story. So we're watching it every hour.
Of course. Now, what rights do people have if they've had a holiday planned to a country affected by the coronavirus? I mean, will their insurance cover them if they cancel now?
No, it won't, Sean. It won't cover it. It only, that kicks in, and refunds and cancellations and all that, that kicks in when the Department of Foreign Affairs issue a statement saying that you're not to travel to A, B or C, and then it kicks in, but not until then.
It's an actual travel ban.
Yes, an actual travel ban as such. And then, as we say, all bets are off. But there are many. I mean, you know, I was talking to people abroad in different countries, from Hanoi down to Spain and so forth and so on. There is a worry about it. And as your doctor said, there's a small bit of panic, which there shouldn't be. There's certainly concern, and we are concerned. And, you know, it's like other tragedies that we've had around the world, and the travel industry is very resilient to this. And we're working together to ensure, first of all, that our clients know where to stand, and we keep constant contact with them, and that's what we're here for.
Pat, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. That's Pat Dawson there, Chief Executive of the Irish Travel Agents Association.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.